You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning, talking a little college ball. And to help us do that, let's go to let's welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton here on the program from Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. My Tigers look like they're the best team in the country, so I'm doing just peachy.
They're on fire. By the way, that was a juicy line heading in the weekend, Joe. LSU minus 9.5 at Mississippi State. I'm glad I took that one because other than that, I was terrible at Pigskin Pick'em last week.
You really think they look like the best team in the country?
No, I'm being very dramatic.
I mean, they do look. They did look good.
They look
but
good.
Let me have my moment.
Daniels to Neighbors. Woo.
Well, and that's what I expected going into the season was we saw it last year, and I thought, well, you're already a year into the chemistry, you're already a year into the offense. Like, let's see that duo come out firing, and we didn't necessarily see that against Florida State, but I will take it. If it's going to happen week three and it's going to kickstart the offense, then I'll take it week three.
So, Caroline, obviously an incredibly disappointing result for Tennessee over the weekend against Florida. Yeah. And, you know, we've discussed a lot about the Florida game and what all went down in that game. My question for you is, how fixable do you think some of these issues are for Tennessee? Be that quarterback play, be that the offensive line that got dominated by a Florida front that I don't think is very good on Saturday. Well, how fixable do you think some of these issues are? How worried should Tennessee fans be by what they've seen so far through three games?
Well, let's break down everything that went wrong. Like, first, I would say penalties just kind of kick them in the butt. I mean, you get 5 false start penalties in a game. And, I mean, that's going to put you behind. And so I think that's, you know, that's fixable. You're in a tough environment. You know, you're not at home. So that's hard. And penalties are going to happen. And Tennessee's not the first team ever to get a bunch of false start penalties or dumb penalties in the swamp. But hey, I mean, that's fixable. You go back into practice, you work on those things, that's fixable. What can't the defense tackle? Like on that long ETN run when he just tapped him on the shoulder.
Come on,
tapped him on the shoulder like, hey, just heads up, I'm here. If you keep running, I'm going to tackle you. Like, no, wrap up and hit him. So that I think is fixable, the tackling, because I think we've seen a better Tennessee defense in the first 2 weeks than we saw in week three. That's fixable. The offensive line, I think that just is what it is. And that's a little bit concerning to me because Tennessee has a lot better defensive fronts coming up on their schedule. Like Texas A&M, like their defense hasn't looked great, but they've got some dudes on the defensive line. They got Alabama coming up, Georgia. So that concerns me about the offensive line, especially because you don't have the wheels that Hendon Hooker had. And Joe Milton, it just kind of sits back in the pocket and just delivers bombs, but he didn't do that on Saturday night. And that's what I want to know is, are they not calling those long bombs because the coaching staff doesn't trust him to do that? Are they not calling those long bombs because they don't trust the receivers to be able to catch them and they don't want to put the ball in a vulnerable place? Is it a little bit of both? Do they feel like this offense works best when it's kind of dink and dunk, short screens and running the football? If that's the case, then I don't know how many games you're truly going to win running your offense like that. So how fixable is quarterback play? I really don't know. Because I don't think that the sole issue or the main number one problem on Saturday night in the Swamp was Joe Milton. I think the problem is he's not Hendon Hooker. And this Josh Heupel offense works best when you have a quarterback that can run that system and can extend plays with his legs. Like Hendon Hooker could do that. He could throw those off-platform throws. Now let's go all the way back to UCF. Mackenzie Milton did that really well, too. He had the wheels. He could run out of the pocket. He could extend plays. He could deliver balls to the receivers while he was on the run. Joe Milton can't do that. Like, he has never thrown an off-platform touchdown throw. So maybe there's just a level of this offense that Hendon Hooker could execute so well that they just don't trust Joe Milton to do.
So you're switching to the freshman is what you're telling us?
No. No. I am not doing that. And we had a lot of very colorful, emotional, maybe is the right word to say, Vol callers on our show yesterday.
Yes.
I said, look, we are in through 3 weeks. Okay. We're through 3 weeks. And I understand that this is Joe Milton's sixth year in college football. But if Joe Milton really was the problem, if this coaching staff really looked at him and said, man, we would have beaten Florida 75-0 had we just had a different quarterback in there, I think they would have made that switch. But I think that there's a reason that they haven't. The grass is always greener on the other side when it comes to quarterbacks, but maybe that's not the solution.
Carolina, on the Alabama front, so that Jalen Milroe doesn't play a snap on Saturday against USF, and I watched that entire game, and let me tell you, it was something to watch on Saturday. Simpson gets in there, makes a couple of throws, but not great. Buckner was awful in that game.
Awful.
And now Saban has come out and said that Milroe displayed the leadership qualities that he was just looking for while, I guess, on the sideline in that game for USF, and now he's going to be the starting quarterback as they take on Ole Miss, which is a very intriguing game coming up on Saturday. So what do you make of where Alabama is at quarterback, and does it make sense to you to just go with Jalen Milroe here on out if you're the Crimson Tide this season?
None of it makes sense. None of it makes sense to me. But yes, it does make sense to go with Milroe moving forward because Buckner was truly, truly awful. And I don't think that they want to throw Ty Simpson out there. And I think they just have just seen, okay, you know, we trust Jalen the most. But switching quarterbacks against USF didn't make sense to me because I think it showed a lack of confidence in Jalen Milroe. And I don't think it was fair. It was like, hey, you know, you didn't do what we needed you to do against a really good Texas team, even though we had the lead going into the fourth quarter. So we're going to switch up quarterbacks against USF and, you know, see if they give us a better shot. That doesn't seem like very good quarterback management to me. Like, that seems like you're walking a very tight rope. And you might say, well, maybe they just wanted to see what they had in Tyler Buckner. Didn't they already know what they had in Tyler Buckner? Didn't they go through a quarterback battle, a very tight quarterback battle all throughout fall camp and throughout the summer? Like, haven't they seen them in practice? Wouldn't they have known what they had in Tyler Buckner? And I was talking about this yesterday. We were trying to break down, you know, possibly what was going down through Nick Saban's head when making that decision. And there was a theory thrown out there that, so Tommy Reese, Alabama offensive coordinator, came to Alabama from Notre Dame. Tyler Buckner transferred to Alabama from Notre Dame. What if Tommy Reese talked to Tyler Buckner and his family and said, I want you to come with me to Alabama. I think that's going to be best for you. You're going to get playing time. You are, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to be our starter. And then Tommy Reese saw how much Jalen Milroe struggled to execute the offense against Texas and has just been bugging Nick Saban. Like, let me give my guy a try. Let me give my guy a try. I want Tyler Buckner to be able to get an opportunity. And Nick Saban finally said, fine. Okay, fine. We'll throw him out there against a team that we're going to beat just so I can prove to you that he is not our answer and Jalen Milroe is our guy. And, you know, and we saw how that happened. Just a theory. I don't know.
It just feels very strange
to me that that you make a quarterback switch and then a couple days after you're like, nope, we're going back. We're going back to our guy.
Well, I guess I'll ask you about Vanderbilt, Caroline. We got Clark Lee coming up this hour. A game that wild one, and maybe a lot of people didn't see it because it was the same time as the Tennessee game. But what do you make of Vanderbilt at this point? 2-2. Had a real opportunity to be 3-1 and have a shot. Kentucky coming in, a team that Vanderbilt beat last year. What are your thoughts on Vanderbilt?
It makes me really – this is one thing that I don't like about college football, and it's that sometimes it feels like we can be in week 3, week 4, and your team's season is over. Like the goals that you may have had set for your team feel like they're unattainable when you're not even halfway through the season. I'm not saying that Vanderbilt season is over in the slightest, but I am saying that going into the season, I thought Vanderbilt needed to go 3-1 in non-conference play to get an opportunity to be bowl eligible. And now they're sitting here 2-2, and that path to being bowl eligible feels that much more difficult. And I know the SEC feels very down this season, but I mean, that Florida game that I thought was gettable for Vanderbilt might not be as gettable after what we saw from them against Tennessee. A Missouri game that I thought was gettable. Well, Missouri just took down the 15th ranked team in the country. So it's, you know, there's not a very clear path. But the most frustrating thing for me for Vanderbilt is they had so many opportunities to win that game. And they simply just, you know, they snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory, if you will. Now, I don't know how many games you can win by turning the ball over 4 times. And they were a field goal away from winning that game, despite the turnover. So it's frustrating. And we talked to Clarkley yesterday. You can sense it in his voice. He's frustrated. But this is a young team, and he's already adjusted the depth chart, you know, getting London Humphreys a starting role against Kentucky this weekend, several other younger members of this team starting roles against Kentucky this weekend. So I think it's optimism for the future for this young core to continue to get experience and be better for next year. But I don't want to talk about next year in week 4. Like, that's sad. I hate that.
Well, it's going to be a juicy weekend this weekend. Florida State, Clemson, you got Colorado, Oregon. I said Ole Miss, Alabama earlier. Lots of really good games coming up this weekend, so we're looking forward to that. Caroline, we will talk to you next Tuesday morning. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
Appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. You usually joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. I had to make a little scheduling adjustment because she's big time now.
That's right. Oh,
on Sirius
XM. She's gone. I forgot to give her crap about big timing us.
I like it.
All right, remember that for next week.
We'll get more into college football coming next. We'll look ahead to a massive weekend in college football. Also discuss the state of the Tennessee and Vanderbilt programs as well. Clark Lee joining us at 7:30. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 on 94.9. The Fan. Sounds taking on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, the AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. Sounds Baseball on 94.9. The Fan, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and Family Leisure. Speaking of the Sounds, I got some tickets to give away. A family 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Jumbo Shrimp at First Horizon Park this Thursday, which is tomorrow. Be calling number 561-5737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win tickets to see the Sounds take on the Jumbo Shrimp at First Horizon Park tomorrow. Looking forward to that.
Great great tune there, Keezer. You know, Tom Sawyer by Rush. You know, Paul Kaharsky thinks that Bush is better than Rush. Did
really?
You know this?
No,
yeah, he thinks Tom Sawyer's too nasally.
Nasally, huh?
Yeah, like Geddy Lee's too nasally as a singer. He thinks Bush is better than Rush. That is one of the worst music takes I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it's not as bad as You on the Beatles, but it's bad.
I mean, look, there's people of a certain age that will just hate me musically, but I mean, I think the Beatles are trash. He loves Springsteen. Trash. I think Springsteen is god-awful. Like, it's just me.
God-awful.
I think it's terrible.
All right, well, you're outdoing Kaharsky. But Bush better than Rush. I mean, we should do a stew of you and Kaharsky's music takes and just dump it all over. I don't know.
Do the Macarena.
Oh, it's Macarena.
It is
I'm
Macarena.
So sorry, text line. Macarena, not Macarena. It's Suckarena, either way.
Joe, big weekend of college football coming up. Ohio State, Notre Dame in a top 10 matchup in South Bend. Oregon State, Washington State in a nice Pac-12 matchup. Oregon and Colorado. No Travis Hunter for Colorado in that game, so that's a tough one. Ole Miss, Alabama in the 2:30 game on CBS coming up in the SEC. And then Florida State and Clemson as well in the ACC. So quite the weekend of college football coming up this weekend. I thought the schedule, honestly, has not been very good for the first 3 weeks.
No.
Not a ton of great games, at least on paper heading into the games. This one, week 4, feels like a doozy in college football. Looking forward to it.
It's great. It's almost too many good games, though.
I know.
You know, it's like
spread them out a little bit.
Right. Like, there's too many good games on at the same time. So if we could have taken a couple and spread them out for the previous weeks. But, no, we'll take it. I mean, I, you know, Ohio State, Notre Dame, fascinating game for sure. I wish, you know, I wish, like you said, Travis Hunter, that's a toughie. I'm still very interested to see how Colorado can hang in that game if they can. I mean, they, you know, did you see the ratings, by the way?
I did.
For Colorado? It was like the fifth most watched game on in ESPN history, the most watched ever, you know, late night game. 9.3 million, and still like 8 million at the end of it.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you're, the thing is, one, it was a great game. Two, I think half the people tuning in just wanted to see the handshake, right?
Yeah,
but anyone saying like people are, you know, people are tiring and got Deion fatigue, or no, I don't think so, and I don't either. I mean, I'm in on, I continue to watch. I just wish we could see Travis Hunter in this game.
Yep, and he's going to be out for this game. By the way, Oregon, a 21-point favorite against Colorado coming up on Saturday. So that's a quite the hefty favorite. Oregon's at home in that game, too. So that's going to be a tough trip for Colorado to pull off there. But no Travis Hunter in that game. And like you said, no Travis Hunter when they play USC either. So could be tough sledding for Colorado. Although I will say, I mean, if Shedeur Sanders keeps playing the way he's playing, they're going to give him a chance offensively at least.
Yeah, he's special. There's no doubt. I mean, he made some plays that they just flat out don't win. And granted, their offense was stuck in the mud for a lot of the night. But
yeah,
man, does he make some crazy plays? Ole Miss at Alabama, very interesting to me.
Alabama's a touchdown favorite in that game,
and I get it. To Alabama, home, yep. You know, and all that. And I know we've seen before where Lane's like, "Get your popcorn," and it's like, "Yeah,
that game's over in the first quarter.
Yeah. You burned it, bro." But I don't know. I mean, you know, Jackson Dart, good player. Judkins, I mean, it's, I don't know, man. That game could be interesting.
Could be very interesting. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Nate. Nate, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
What's up, guys? Joe, I eat mac and cheese. I don't eat macarena.
Yes, get him.
Yeah, okay, macarena. Hey, this song sucks.
The MTSU homecoming game. Because they are actually playing Colorado State.
Yep.
And as of right last night, MTSU was a 2.5-point favorite. I'm hoping for a letdown game from Colorado State after the emotional game with Colorado and having that long travel. What do you all think about this game upcoming? In Murfreesboro.
Well, it's certainly going to be a different set of circumstances than Colorado State played or had to face last week, right? I mean, you've got all that attention on that Colorado State game, the handshake, the conversation before the game, all those things. By the way, shout out to Deion Sanders. I thought he handled the press conference really well.
Agreed.
Yesterday. For those who missed it, basically saying, hey, stop with the death threats. That'd be great if you could not do that. He's forgiven all those things. So I thought Deion Sanders handled that really well yesterday. But I mean, this is going to be interesting to see, you know, MTSU's gone on the road the first 2 weeks. They go back home last week, get the win against Murray State. But they, you know, they played at Alabama and then at Missouri. They almost got Missouri.
They did. I mean, that's the thing. Caroline's right. You know, Missouri, big win last week. But Missouri absolutely could have lost to MTSU. So it's so hard to know. Like, you know, Middle Tennessee's 3-point favorites against Colorado State. I was very impressed with Colorado State in that game.
Too.
But also, how much of that is just the emotion and the intensity and focus of already a rivalry game plus everything else that went into that game? How much of a chance is there for a letdown after coming off that game, too? I mean, I really have no idea what to expect from that game.
Vanderbilt hosting Kentucky this weekend, Joe. Kentucky almost a 2-touchdown favorite in this game. I don't know what we've learned about Kentucky so far based on the quality of opponents that they played to this point, but you know, Leary in at quarterback, Vanderbilt's defense, it's been rough so far this year. So can Vanderbilt put together some stops and allow their offense to have a chance to move the ball in this game? But you know, before the season, you'd looked at this game as one of the winnable ones for Vanderbilt and the SEC on the schedule. Now they're 2-2 in non-conference play. What do you make of this matchup for Vanderbilt against Kentucky?
Kentucky's been very, like a lot of the SEC, has been very uneven. You know, they don't have a lot of fluidity on offense. They got some talent. There's a certain level of, like, physicality in that program. You know, they're a solid program. I mean, Ray Davis is a nice pickup for them. I mean, I know Clark Lee was asked quite a bit about him at his presser yesterday, about him leaving and all that stuff. You know, frankly, I would like Vanderbilt's chances a lot more in this game if they had Ray Davis instead of Kentucky having Ray Davis.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact that Vanderbilt won that game last year isn't great for Vanderbilt this year because, you know, I think sometimes people sleep on Vanderbilt in this league, and I don't think there's going to be any sleeping on Vanderbilt right now. But I want to see Vanderbilt play a clean game and see what comes of it. You know, if Vanderbilt plays a game and just takes away some of those just debilitating mistakes, one, the bottom line will look different now for sure. I mean, they'd be 3-1, but honestly, if you don't have a couple of the killer mistakes at Wake Forest, that game is a fourth-quarter game. You know, and people are thinking a lot differently, feeling a lot differently about Vanderbilt right now. They're going to have to do that to beat anyone in the SEC, including this team.
Coming up next, speaking of Vanderbilt, we'll be joined by Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. We'll look ahead to the matchup against Kentucky as the doors begin SEC play. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and say hello to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. Clark, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're awesome. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Clark, SEC play opening up for you all beginning on Saturday against Kentucky. When you look at the tape and you study Kentucky, what stands out to you about this matchup coming up on Saturday?
Well, I think I say this annually with this matchup. I mean, I ton of respect for Mark and what he's built. I think he you know, really built this program in the same manner that we're building ours, and just, you know, starting at the foundation and trying to develop into a sustained success. So they're at that point. You know, it's a talented roster. They've done a nice job in the portal, strengthening where they have needs in the offensive line, running back, quarterback. You know, defensively too, long and athletic and big up front. You know, so they're gonna test us, test our discipline. You know, it's a little different offensive approach than what we've seen to this point this season. So, you know, we'll have to be on our A game when it comes to some of the things they like to do in the passing game and the running game. But we're excited for that challenge. And you know, we still believe, you know, obviously our best performance is in front of us somewhere, and we've been really disappointed the last two weekends with how we played. And so we're going to have awareness of what Kentucky does and what their structure is and how they're going to try to attack us. But I'm way more interested in seeing our team come out and play with fewer mistakes, protect the ball, and try to put pressure on the opponent.
Yeah, Clark, especially after the last one, just what's the emotional state of the team? I mean, are you in a situation of, you know, trying to bring confidence back at this point? Like, what's the temperature of the team right now?
It's always a challenge because you got, you know, 115, 18 to 22-year-olds. And you know, the moments like Saturday are hard for me too. I mean, that was a challenge and painful. And I love the way we started in the game. I was proud of the way we fought back. I didn't like how UNLV was able to take the air out of our game. Like, they just, you know, felt like in that second quarter we just were deflated heading into the halftime. So we had a pretty direct and pointed conversation when we got in the locker room at halftime. But I thought kind of galvanized our group and led to counterpunching in the second half. But yeah, I mean, that, you know, those are hard games, and if you're just going to live moment by moment, I mean, it's a challenge to bounce back from. But what we've spent time on, you know, starting on Monday when I was back with the team, was just the idea that, you know, we're 2-2, everything that we want's out in front of us. We know that we haven't played to our highest level yet, not even close. I mean, we turned the ball over four times on Saturday, one for touchdown. And ultimately, like, the other thing is, too often we're down in the red zone and we're kicking field goals. So there's so many things that we can do with our execution, with our ball security, with the way we play, that's going to allow us to find, you know, a better performance through the course of the game. And again, celebrations post game, obviously the league play adds challenge to it, but we embrace that. And I think on the whole, we bounced back emotionally. yeah, I'd like to see this team go out and play well on Saturday. And I think Saturday will ultimately be the signal of where we ended up mentally coming out of the tough road loss. I think the work has been pointed. I've kept my message very direct and, try to be to the point with respect to my expectations. And my belief that we have a good team just hasn't played well in two weeks. And we have to work hard to improve the places we need to improve.
So, Clark, overall, what do you make of the way that AJ has played to this point this season? And what do you think is still left out in front of him as you guys move forward here?
I think statistically he's having a nice start to the season. I think what's there's a lot out there for him because I believe he can be an elite player. And I think it starts with connectivity within the offense and leading that unit, galvanizing that unit, being a person that is able to get those guys on the same page in the competitive moment on game day. But more in terms of his play and his performance, just consistency. We had the pick before halftime that ultimately led to them hitting a field goal to take the lead, heading into half. And that's a forced throw. I mean, I thought his decision-making was improved. I thought there were times where he threw the ball away or he used his legs to keep us on schedule. Those are things I want to continue to see. I think in terms of, throwing the ball, I think he has an idea pre-snap of where he wants to go with the ball. Post-snap, he's got to confirm or deny that initial thought and then have the ability to work through his progression and get to the back too. So getting through the full progression will be another sign of his maturation in the position. And just developing that consistency within his performance. All the talent is there and the heart and the want-to is there too. I think he can really develop over the next few weeks and make this a special season.
So on the passing front, Clark, obviously London Humphreys is just, big plays right out of the gate here. You have so much talent at that spot, but what have you seen from him just in sort of forcing himself into more opportunities because he's such an explosive player?
Yeah, we kind of saw this in the summer with him as we were just kind of, in our summer training program. And then fall camp, he just almost immediately stood out as being a weapon and a guy that we could rely upon. The thing that is so impressive about London as a freshman is he's so mature in his process. I mean, you feel like you're dealing with a third year player, and it's a testament to his high school program and his coach, and obviously they do a great job. And I've been really, really impressed. Nothing seems to be too big for him. Obviously, he's really fast, but he's also a very good receiver, and he knows how to get open. And AJ knows how to find them. So, we need him to continue his trajectory. Obviously, freshmen at times will hit walls. Let's assume he doesn't and just keep playing his way forward. Again, this could be a really special year for him. But I think there's also been strong play. Obviously, Will Shepherd in the red zone has been really good. Jaden McGowan has also been explosive. Quincy Skinner comes in, and I think he got two snaps in the game. One went for a big touchdown there in the fourth quarter. I mean, we know that that's a talented group of people. I think it's about, again, building that chemistry with AJ, getting them all on the same page, and then designing ways to use them. And those are good things when that's where you're focused as a coach.
Vanderbilt coach Clark Lee with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Clark, on the defensive side of the ball, What from your vantage point, what are the keys to maybe finding a little bit more consistency there and coming away with more stops as you begin SEC play here this week?
Well, I think the first thing is this program has to interlock all three phases, and those turnovers put the defense in a compromised position. Obviously, turnovers that go for touchdown, which we've had in consecutive games, those put points on the board. So I was really proud of the defense in the first half. I thought there was a lot of battle and a lot of toughness there, and they were on the whole forcing field goal attempts with drives. I thought we had good third down performance in the first half. And I thought we lost a little bit of that in the second half. And part of that is we played too many snaps. And part of the reason we played too many snaps was kind of the sputtering out of the offense in the second quarter. But, you know, what I want to see from them, you know, we gave up two rushing touchdowns where we were, you know, out of structure because of an unbalanced formation. To me, that's a controllable. We can get lined up. We can communicate. We can get 11 people on the same page. And that you know, anytime you're playing within structure, you're going to win. Good offenses know how to attack you, and they know how to make you move. And they can find a gap that way. But a great defense knows how to play our technique and understand exactly what the offense is trying to do. So to play more structure, to leverage and tackle the ball will be important. Obviously, Kentucky's running game is strong, and we know Ray, and he's a good player, and so we're going to need to keep him bottled up the best we can. And then for us, just based off kind of our you know, our last couple seasons, we have to cap the explosive pass. I thought our corner play was strong up until, again, the end of the game there where, you know, a freshman corner just set his feet and let a route behind him that can't get behind him. You know, I thought those two guys, the two freshmen, really held up well in the game. You know, we're banged up at safety, and so we're going to need our depth to show up and to help us win. And if we can do that, you know, we're going to at least force Kentucky to go the long way, which I think bodes well for us being in a tight game late, similar to what we were in last year.
Well, on that side of the ball, Clark, tons of injuries, like you said. I mean, I know Jalen Mahoney, very key guy, has been banged up. Dericky Wright in particular, I know you talked about these injuries yesterday, but it sounds like he's going to try to go, but he's going to be fighting through something on a weekly basis. Is that fair to say?
He's got an ankle sprain that, you know, that he's battling through. And I mean, I've got so much respect for him. It happened in the first series against Alabama A&M. And if you watch the play, I mean, the next play is a third down on the goal line, essentially. And he looks like a one-legged man hobbling over and ends up making the play on the ball. And then he was out for basically the remainder of that game. But came back, you know, against Wake Forest and didn't practice through the week, played on Saturday, you know, through a delay and all that. And just, he played every snap, you know? And so, you know, he did that again, you know, played through it again at UNLV and with ankle injuries. I mean, that, you know, it's already disruptive, but the fact that we haven't been able to rest him, has just, it's sustained now. It's recurring. It's not going away. And so he's going to give it his best shot this week, like he's done. I mean, hopefully we can get something out of him. If not, then, you know, we're going to need those other guys to step up. Jalen Mahoney wasn't able to finish the game. He seems to be recovering this week, and so I'm hopeful that he'll be out there with us, but certainly not a guarantee. Savion Riley's still out right now. And so, you know, we have to – this is where you have to rely on depth. We battled some of these injuries in fall camp, and so we got a ton of reps to John House and Marlon Sewell, and those guys – need to prepare as though they're starting the game, and then we'll see as the week goes how Jalen and DeRicky shape out.
Well, Clark, we're looking forward to league play beginning at home coming up on Saturday. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you next week.
Always good to be with you. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
Vanderbilt Clark. Head coach Clark Lee, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. The Rex Rant you can check out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! Oh, we'll get ready to play Tennessee. We're incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 on the program. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours after the beautiful rant of Bruce Pearl in the background from last year. Is that last year? It was last year.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, that was last year. All right, well, let's keep it to college football coaches and such as the very soft Lincoln Riley. The very, very soft Lincoln Riley. I'm trying to figure this out. I don't really understand exactly what happened here, but Lincoln Riley, first of all, Lincoln Riley they announced a suspension of a beat writer.
Yes, I saw this.
A suspension of a beat writer. I did not realize the beat writer for the Southern California News Group worked for you, Lincoln Riley.
A 2-week suspension, if memory serves me correctly.
2 weeks to block the access to this reporter, which is Luca Evans. Okay, and this was like a story. It was basically – so this is something that does come up a fair amount. Like, you know, and I get the policy. Titans have this policy, which is like – and again, if they didn't, I would just spend a day out at Titans camp and I would just write a story about every creative, profane thing that Mike Vrabel said in the course of a day, and it would be amazing. I mean, I'd just do it every day, like the Vrabel diary, you know?
A lot of readership that way.
Yeah. And, you know, takes a pull off the Winston-Salem. No, I'm just kidding. He doesn't smoke in front of us. But people have this. You know, I've covered beats where, you know, you have access to practice, but, you know, what is said on the court is off the record. Now, I've also, to me, it's like common sense. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, yes, if you're covering something, you know, it's like, in all seriousness, like Vrabel screams at somebody, right. Like, what are you doing, Ryan? You know, or whatever. I mean, that's what, you know, teams don't want that. And I get, like, the policy makes sense, but when it's like, something innocuous, which apparently is what this was. It was basically about this player being shy and just a little interaction. I've written a lot of things over the years where, I mean, even like, okay, Charles Robinson was on last week after covering the Jordan Love game and the Bears, and he had a lot of like coming off the field locker room whoop guys. I've done that when the Titans beat the Ravens. And that's different. They don't have control over that. But like Titans beat the Ravens, I just wrote about the whole scene of the Titans coming into the locker room and Terry Lewan like screaming. I was talking about Vrabel cutting something off, whatever it was. I forget, but it was funny. And that stuff is, to me, it's like real, actual interactions of human beings, right? That I think can give you a lot more insight than sometimes people sitting at a press conference saying blah blah blah, coach speak, player speak. I mean, there is like nothing at all about this thing that's like egregious or harmful or anything at all. It's just a pure control thing. And I think of like what USC under Pete Carroll was, which was totally wide open. Everybody come, Snoop Dogg's at practice, talk to anybody whenever you want. And I know that was a while ago, and I know that Pete Carroll ultimately, you know, left for the NFL. Well, thanks a lot, Charles Robinson. by the way, it turns into a Charles Robinson fest. You know, Reggie Bush loses the Heisman, but you know, I think we just had Clark Lee on. You know, Vanderbilt this year, and I think it's a great move, and I think it should be the policy moving forward. Like everything's open, everything's wide open. You can go to practice, you can watch it all. There's no harm done. I mean, you show me the harm ever when you have access to people. I mean, if there's examples of it, I'll listen. I don't know of an example. I don't know of an example of harm done. Obviously, if you have a private conversation that's sensitive or something like that, then, yeah, you have to use discretion as a reporter. This was not that at all. So just really disappointed in Lincoln Riley. And I think, you know, I think he needs to kind of understand, too, that he's in L.A. and he's not, you know, he's not in Norman, Oklahoma. It's just, you know, access in general has been going the wrong way in college athletics. I would again invite college athletics to look at the most popular sport. I'd invite all other sports to look at the most popular sport in America. And, again, they have rules.
Which is the National Football League.
Which is the National Football League. And, yes, they have rules and things like that. But it is the best access. And I think that you should look at that and ask yourself, what is the problem with giving access to people? And what are you trying to say when you try to – suspend a reporter for two weeks. I mean, there's seriously nothing at all about this that's problematic.
Well, and it's funny because some of the reaction after this has taken place with Lincoln Riley is coming out of Oklahoma, basically saying that he was soft like this at Oklahoma, and this is what he's going to be at USC too. I mean, look, the first off, if I'm this reporter's publication, I'm like, who do you think you are suspending my writer for 2 weeks? Like, they don't work for you. What are you talking about? I mean, that would be probably the first step I'd be taking if I was the Orange County Register's beat writer here, or employer here. But it's really soft from Lincoln Riley. Again, what we've uncovered here is, I mean, it was just a really small thing here that's taken place. And it just kind of shows me, you know, Lincoln Riley, and he's not alone in this, but there are so many college football coaches that are just total control freaks. And I get why. Like, you got to be to a certain degree, especially with NIL and recruiting and all these things of, you know, we've talked about what a 365-day job being a college football coach is now. So I get it. There's a certain level of control freak that I think you have to be if you're going to be successful in this job. But sometimes you're worried about stuff that just doesn't matter and you're wasting time on it. And this is what Lincoln Riley's doing here.
Well, I mentioned Pete Carroll. They had the very open policy. And look, I mean, USC got in huge trouble and Pete Carroll left for the NFL. And yep. Reggie Bush lost his Heisman because of Charles Robinson's story, which was basically a jilted agent who was going to represent Reggie Bush. And then he switched agents. So the agent gave up all the receipts and everything on all the cheating. Okay. Back then, so there's an example. Someone might say, see, keep your program locked down. Now no one cares. No one cares if someone's paid. I mean, really. Yeah. I mean, so like that to me was the one reason in college athletics for there to be more control, because the market was underground and not legal.
Right.
Whereas in the NFL, you know, it's like, yeah, here's your contract and it's how it should be. Well, now that we've gotten to this point where essentially it is legal to be paid, there's no reason to do this. Get more coverage. And again, like Lincoln Riley's like, well, he wouldn't even say what the problem was. You know, the multiple rules are broken. This is where, you know, a lot of times, like, fans will talk about, like a reporter's, you know, you're not asking the tough questions. You're afraid that you're going to get banned. And it's always like, that doesn't happen. Like, they can't. And we have organizations that protect us. Like, you can't. But here's USC trying to actually do it. And you see the uproar. And I'm going to keep the uproar up because this can't stand. I mean, this is ridiculous. And Lincoln Riley needs to be shouted down on this.
Robbie and Rex Road presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they're referred to so often. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we will be joined in studio for the next hour by Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com. We'll get into
Titans buns
and the Chargers with him. We'll look ahead to the Titans and the Browns coming up on Sunday. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.